Hey guys, it's Lauren Yates here, celebrity interviewer, entertainment reporter, and the host of this podcast, Rave It Up, celebrity news, reviews, and interviews. If this is the first time you're listening, go check out our show's trailer on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to learn more about us. And make sure to follow us on social media to tell us what else you would like to hear from this podcast. We are under Rave It Up TV on Instagram, Rave It Up Show on Facebook, and our website is raveituptv.com. Now today, we have a chat to Australian artist Nathan Foley, who you may remember as an original member of High Five, and for being on The Voice last year. We have a chat about how hard it has been for him to get away from his High Five days, about his experience on The Voice, and about his brand new single, She Devil, and the filming of the video clip in isolation. There is so much to cover, so let's get into it now.
3, 2, 1.
Let's do this. Raise it
up. Hey guys, it's RJ May from Breaking Bad.
It's Adam Savani from Step Up.
It's Keegan Allen from Pretty Little Liars.
Hi, this is Arthur Buttrose.
It's Cosentino.
It's Rob Mills.
Todd McKenney with Lauren Yates on Rave It Up.
Raving It Up.
I'm having fun.
Hashtag Lauren, Rave It Up.
Sorry.
Thank you. I like that effect.
We're raving it up.
Nathan, welcome to Rave It Up. It is a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you going today?
I'm not too bad. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome. It looks like you have a very big DVD collection behind you.
Yeah, it didn't happen overnight. It's probably like a 20-year process. So it's I spent a lot of my time working, so I haven't really gone out that much. Can't you tell? So I thought when I'm home, I've got it.
So you've been probably rewatching them all again.
Exactly. So collectors, but you know what? They're becoming a little bit obscure now, CDs and DVDs. So they might become collector's items one day. You never know.
Well, I still have a very big DVD collection, so might as well keep them as long as you can.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Well, it's great to finally have you on the show. We do have a mutual friend too, who was originally helping me get you on the show back when you were doing all your cruise ship performances.
Okay.
Clarissa Sparta.
Oh, yeah, I actually wrote to her last night because she was on The Voice yesterday. Yeah, she was asking me some advice I did it last year, obviously, so she was asking me, should I do it? I said, yeah, of course. She's a great talent, and obviously, can't beat them, join them, you know, give it a go.
Exactly. Well, last year we caught up over coffee, and then I don't know how you came up with the conversation, but you did. And I was like, oh my goodness, we'd love to have him on the show and have a chat. And I think
she's lovely.
She did message you, I think, about this interview, but anyway, okay. It all works. We're now here.
Excellent.
Since this is your first time on the show, we'd love to get to know you a little bit better and start from the beginning, if that's okay, to get a good idea of how you've made it to where you are today. So apparently you always knew you wanted to be a singer. You heard Michael Jackson and just knew that's what you wanted to do. So there was never any other careers that you wanted to pursue when you were younger, or just saw singing like a hobby, like I guess most kids do?
I don't know. My parents divorced when I was pretty young. I was about two or 3 years old.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
No, it's okay. I was pretty young. But they all get along. They all get along. It's great. But I used to go and visit my dad every second weekend, and he used to sell antique furniture at some of the stores in Sydney and North Sydney. So I was 5 at the time. You know what 5-year-olds are like, running around, you know, making a muck. But I came across in this secondhand shop a box of vinyl records, and one of which was the Jackson 5 album. So at this time, I had no idea. I mean, I was listening to a lot of music from even 2, but this was the first album that I ever owned. I actually still have it today. It's actually in my other room there, and it's got drawing on the front. My stupid 5-year-old self drew on it with a permanent marker. Idiot. But I took it back, my dad put the vinyl on, and I just fell in love with little Michael Jackson's voice, and I just started mimicking. And by the time I was 10, no word of a lie, I sounded exactly like little Michael Jackson, which was bizarre. And I did my first album when I was 10 as well, and wrote a couple of songs for that. And I just started doing talent quests, and that's how I started getting my experience from a very, very young age. So I think that's when I met Clarissa, actually, a long time ago. But yeah, started doing talent quests. And then have you heard of the Coca-Cola School Spectacular?
No, but I saw that in your biography when I was reading it.
It's one of the biggest variety shows in the world, and they held it at the Sydney Entertainment Centre, which is no longer there. But there's about 12,000 people, audience members, come and see, and it's all run through the public school system. So I was a soloist in that for 7 years because a lady saw me in a talent quest. So one thing led to another, and then talent development project, which is sort of a side project of the School Spectacular, also run through the government, where different celebrities and artists come in and they watch you do a song once a month, or twice a month, actually, two days a month. So you go in and you sing and they give you pointers, and that's where they contacted me kind of with the high five thing when I was 18. But before high five, I was working doing singing with orchestras and bands since I was 10 years old. So 8 years of that before that show started. So in answer to your question, I'm babbling. I pretty much got my start from just listening. I've never had any formal training, singing lessons or piano or guitar. I just listened and got on stage, and yeah, still to this day, I just went out there and I did it. You know, it was just all hands-on experience. And I think the answer to your other question, no, I've actually never had any other passion but the arts. And I'm lucky to say this year marks my 30th year in the industry, and I've never done any other job except entertain. So I've never had any other job to fall back onto, which is amazing.
Need to bake you a cake or something.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, at the moment, it's kind of like with COVID, it's awful time. So I still haven't fallen back on another job, living off the savings at the moment. Obviously, it's been a bit hard with everybody, but yeah, that's how I kind of started, and I never looked back. I always had a passion for it. I'll shut up now. You can talk. Go.
No. You can tell that you do have a passion for it, and it's great that you could do it for 30 years without anything else. But writing songs at 10, were they any good?
Well, the very first song I wrote was What's Happening to This World of Ours.
Wow, at 10.
I know, an environmental song. And I sang it because at that time I lived in the western suburbs of – I lived in Ingleburn when I was a kid. Then I was about 10. We moved up to the Central Coast, lived there for 3 years. And the school I went to there when I was 10 – they were holding a songwriting competition for the environment at Darling Harbour in Sydney. So I wrote this song, but it was supposed to be a choir event. So I was the lead singer in the choir, and they were just doing backings. But I actually technically won the songwriting competition when I was 10, but got disqualified because I sang solo with a backing. It was supposed to be an all-choir thing.
Really?
Technicality. But that was the first song I wrote, What's Happening to This World of Ours. And then I wrote a song about my primary school friends called Good Times. But I've actually got – actually, there it is. This is the album when I was 10. I don't know if you can see that, probably.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, so it's got the two songs on there. I've got plenty of copies, never digitalized. It's all just on bloody hard copy. But, so that's how it's kind of started, the songwriting thing, which I absolutely love and have fallen in love with even more so now.
Looking for news that is fair and unbiased? Visit our friends over at Our Shout Media. For all the latest news from Australia and around the world, as well as their own weekly podcast, Our Shout Media delivers news that you can trust. Check them out at ourshoutmedia.wordpress.com. Our Shout Media, news delivered the Australian way on us.
Started singing professionally at 10 too, not just writing songs. You're in, you know, bands and clubs all across Sydney. Was that daunting and scary performing in front of crowds like that? And especially, you know, clubs and pubs and people are probably drunk and you're only 10. Like,
oh, they stuck me in the back doors. But honestly, I think it's just like riding a bike. I mean, if you start anything really young, you don't really have any fear when you're a kid. I think if you start things when you're later on in life, when you're in your late teens or in your early 20s, you kind of have that fear because you don't really know yourself. You don't have that confidence, and you start judging what other people think of you. But when you're a kid, you don't care. You mix and mingle with everybody. You talk to everybody. You try new things. You jump off the bloody top roof of sheds. You just do anything, which I've done. And you just do really stupid things. But honestly, I loved music, so I didn't have any fear. I went out there and I sang, I did my thing, and it paid off. You know, even saying that, I mean, I am nowhere near where I really want to be yet either. I'm still learning every day. I'm still trying to improve my craft. And I think that's the kind of attitude you got to have. Back then, it was a fun thing. I wanted to sing, and it wasn't about work to me. And, you know, on reflection, even now, it's still not about work to me. It's such a love and a passion that I have for it that it's, yeah, the money's just extra to me. It's just like, okay, cool, got a paycheck for that one. Sweet.
Yeah. And we're human. We always got to keep growing and evolving, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And do you feel like starting at such a young age that it took away your childhood a little bit, or are you really grateful that you got to start so young?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of artists that start at a very young age and they whinge and whine about it later on. But then you got to think about it. A lot of the young entertainers had a massive life, had a beautiful life being on stage and experiencing new things that probably a child that didn't have those experiences experience. You know what I mean? So, no, I still was a kid. You know, I still cracked ribs and broke arms and rode my BMX bike every day after school. So I kind of shared that. I mean, I started off in sport, though. I mean, entertainment wasn't my first thing. When I was five, I was playing soccer and Aussie rules football and you know, basketball when I got to high school. So I love sport as well, but that wasn't my passion. It was just fun. So I guess, no, I don't think I've missed out on anything. I think I've probably lived 20 lifetimes in one, even more so, because it is a beautiful life. I mean, the entertainment industry is a hard life. There's never ever anything guaranteed in it. There's never guaranteed paycheck. There's never any guaranteed security in our job. But it is a beautiful job at the same time. You know, you get to travel, you get to meet so many beautiful and amazing people of all cultures, and you learn, you grow so much as a human by being in the industry that we're in.
Yeah, and changing their lives through music. It's just so powerful.
Yeah, universal language, you know, everyone understands it. You know, sometimes we don't understand ourselves when we talk, but, you know, when it comes to music, we all love that.
Oh, yeah, couldn't agree more. Puts us in a good mood, or it can just, like, you know, touch the heartstrings and
that's right.
So I've got to say, like, from, you know, the bands, when you were 10 in clubs, that's a very big difference from, was it 2010 when you performed the national anthem at the Darling Harbour Australia Day celebrations? That was in front of 250,000 people. Do you still get nerves when you perform? Because that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think about it. You know, any audience is a good audience to me. I mean, I've done gigs to 4 people and I've done gigs to 250,000 people live, you know, so it's kind of, to me, there's no big difference. It's just louder, I guess, you know, so you go out there. I mean, I've never actually had the fear of an audience. I've had more of a fear within myself, making sure that I do a good job or that I don't screw something up. That's the fear that I would have. But nothing to do with an audience. I've never cared about what people really think, even if there's criticism. I mean, not, you know, everyone has their own flavor, I guess. Not everyone likes certain things or certain music. So if someone doesn't like a song that I do, I'm like, yeah, okay, no worries. Well, you know, everyone's individual. You know, it's just like not everyone likes the same colors. Not everyone likes the same things or the same food or the same music. So you just got to run with the punches and just do what you do and love what you do.
I guess it's a bit of an adrenaline rush, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the adrenaline is all part of entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm guessing, like, a lot of High Five fans are listening or you know, people that were fans when they were kids. And, we've got to talk about it. It was a very big part of your life. And, you know, you joined, like, shortly after school, didn't you? Like, 18.
Yeah, I was 18. And you know what? I didn't realize, you know, how it was going to be. You know, I was just, obviously I was working since I was 10. So I was consistently working. So it wasn't like I was leaving high school and going, oh, I really need a job. But I'm like, you know what? I'll go for a couple of auditions. And funnily enough, a lot of stuff happened around that time. I was just 6 months early before that. Because I was working a lot with a lot of the bandstand artists from back in the day, like the Cold Joy and Little Patties and all those guys. You probably don't know those guys, but they were massive on TV, you know, during the 60s and stuff like that, 60s and 70s and stuff. So they were like the Australian rockers of our time. So I did a lot of work with them when I was 10, 11 years old. So they gave me a lot of pointers on different things. And funnily enough, when I got to around the High Five days, I was offered a support role. So one of the guys was in Bandstand Cold Joy. His brother, Kevin Jacobson, used to bring out a lot of the massive artists like the Beatles and Michael Jackson and all these guys. And he contacted me and said, are you interested in doing a support to Shania Twain? And I was only 17 at the time. I'm like, yeah, okay. But at that stage, I just signed a contract with High Five. So I asked the producers and they didn't allow me to do it. They says, no, you're not allowed to. So I missed that opportunity. And the same thing, I went for an audition for Les Mis as well. And I got, you know, I got very close to that as well. But same thing, I just couldn't do it. So High Five kind of engulfed my life. I was trying to weigh up both at the same time. But yeah, 18, pretty young, but looking for a job. And funnily enough, I'm not a kids entertainer. I still to this day never saw myself as an entertainer for children. I was just being myself. I felt like I was an adult entertainer just working on a kid's show. And that's weird that I feel that way, but that's just the way it was. And you go, well, yeah, but you smile a lot. Yeah, well, that's my personality. I was born that way. But you got a lot of energy. Yeah, been like that since I was 2 years old. That's just who I am, you know. But just because I've got a lot of energy or smile doesn't mean I'm a kid's entertainer. So, just who I am, man. Come on. I got bees in my butt. I was born that way. Jeez. Get over yourself, you know.
And as you said, you needed a job and, you know, it was a very, very good job. It lasted 10 years.
Lasted 10 years. 10 years, I know. Crazy. Never thought that would happen.
Yeah, and everybody still remembers it. And, like, I don't want to make you feel, you know, older than me, but I actually met you for the very first time when I was a little girl.
Haven't changed a bit. Haven't changed a bit.
Thank you. I just obviously look a bit older now. But you and Charlie were my favourites, so I still remember it like it was sweet. Yesterday. I was like, oh my God, they're here right in front of me. They're not on just TV.
No, you know that's a good thing too. I mean, that's the thing that I'm honestly. I mean, in Australia, and probably even New Zealand, I guess, you have the tall poppy syndrome. You have the people out there that look at someone and go, they typecast you and put you into a box. They go, okay, well, you're in High Five, you did a kids show, so you definitely can't sing. You can't perform adult songs. That's just not normal. What do you mean you do this? What, you have alcohol? You drink, you do this, you do that, you go out, your party's like, yeah, I'm an adult. That's what I can do. I'm a bloody adult. Come on, get a grip. So they sort of put you in this box. But to me, I think that it was a really privileged experience being in that show because people see it as a kid's show, but I saw it as a variety show because not only were the kids watching it, their teenage sisters and brothers are watching it, their parents are watching it, which were then in their, you know, 30s. Their uncles and aunties, their grandparents, which were senior citizens, are watching it. So it's just a broad range of people. And now, obviously, you've got that younger generation, you've got the teens, you've got the 20-year-olds, which was our original audience, then you've got the parents, which are now in their 50s, which isn't old, that have honestly supported me from day dot to now, and they're the ones supporting me now with my music, you know, and my new releases, and it's just, I'm just really appreciative and obviously so respectful of these guys. I mean, I met so many, I won't swear, so many holes, and out there, and they get so caught up and they have these massive egos because they don't appreciate the fans that actually put them there, you know. So I'm just really glad that, you know, the audience has followed me on this journey. So that's a really cool thing.
And the good thing about kids entertainment, and, you know, once they grow up, you always get some more kids rolling in.
I know. It's just like, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean I don't, you know, go and have sex or anything like that? I said, how are kids born anyway? Hello.
And it's good that, like, with High Five that you could, you know, just spread, you know, love and joy and make lives better. Like, you know, you got to visit heaps of children's hospitals and, you know, visiting sick kids and making their lives better. And even just all the fans, you know, as I said, I still remember it like it was yesterday. And yeah, that was ages ago. So.
Well, I think that was the most, I don't know, the most amazing thing that I got out of the experience of that show. It wasn't to me just about the music. It wasn't about being in a pop group. It wasn't about anything like that. To me, it was about making a difference in a child's life, in a parent's life. I mean, because as you just mentioned about the hospitals, we went and visited so many sick children, some of which didn't survive, some of which, you know, passed away even a few days to a week after we saw them. And even just giving that joy to those kids and seeing them light up and seeing the parents light up as well. And I remember distinctly in my head that we saw this little girl, and she was dying from some sort of liver cancer, and she was all swollen up. And we went in, and the mother says she hasn't smiled in like 2 years until you guys walked in and saw her. And that just, the girls broke down. We were just like, wow, oh my God, like, you just don't know the impact that you can have on somebody's life by just giving them this, that little bit of time, giving them that bit of little bit of love, you know, and we should do more of that, you know?
Absolutely. So rewarding for you, and it's still something you remember to this day and can hopefully incorporate into your own solo career.
Well, I hope so too. I hope so too.
Hey guys, it's RJ May from Breaking Bad.
It's Adam Savani from Step Up.
Bryce Johnson from Pretty Little Liars.
It's Rob Mills.
Todd McKenney with Lauren Yates on Rave It Up.
These celebrities are sharing a message of hope and inspiring the younger generation in our new book, Knowing What I Know Now. This is filled with 70 quotes from your favourite celebrities on what they would tell their 14-year-old selves. A book filled with amazing advice to help you chase your dreams or help you deal with bullying or depression, and is available right now on Booktopia.
So you were in Hi-Fi for 10 years and left in 2008 to pursue your solo career. Was that scary going out on your own and trying to get away from that Hi-Fi image? Because I know that a lot of people do still see you as that Hi-Fi guy, but obviously you wanted to be able to, you know, be your own person, your Nathan Foley.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing was, I mean, the industry that I was in before Hi-Fi still knew me as just Nathan Foley, and I had a lot of respect from that community. Yeah, well, the 10 to 18 year old, I mean, those 8 years, I established myself as a solo artist. But as soon as High Five came to air, it was like prominent in your face every day, 3:30 p.m. on Channel 9. So that kind of overtook the image that I tried to work for so long after 8 years. So after 10 years of High Five, I was like, okay, I guess in a way I was a little bit naive. I came out of it going, oh, good, I've got the airplay, I've got the exposure, I've got the publicity out there, people know me, so it's going to make an easy transition to go into what I want to do. And that wasn't the case. I mean, I had a lot of hands up, I had a lot of false promises and things like that. But honestly, it was a little bit of a struggle, and for at least, well, it wasn't a long time, it was probably a good few months, and I thought, I didn't really pre-prepare myself for leaving the show. I think I just came out expecting that something was going to happen for me. And that's just not the way you should work in Australia. Just, you got to have all your dots and stuff marked out and ready to go, which I didn't have. So after a while, I got an agent and they started pushing me towards music theatre. So I did Jerry Springer, the opera, I did Mamma Mia for a year, and also did Grease on the Beach, which is a massive charity event for the Olivia Newton-John Foundation, which I played Kinnicky in that. And in all honesty, music theatre to me, it was okay, but it just wasn't my game. You know, it was just different people. Like, I'm a pretty social person. I love hanging out with people, but I don't ever get into anyone else's business. I never go, you know, I don't care. I don't want to know about what you had for lunch. I don't want to know what argument you had with the missus or the mister. You know, I just don't like getting involved with people's dramas. I just stay away from it. I just want to keep the peace, have some fun, do my thing. And music theatre land to me was all about being in other people's shoes and, you know, bitchiness. And I mean, obviously, I'm just speaking on my own experience. I'm not speaking, obviously, everyone has different experiences. But for me, I was like, I've been so used to doing my own solo thing. I'm so used to being in a group of four other people where we kind of knew our own space and knew our own little thing to do and stay away from it. And then when this came along, I'm like, hang on, these people want to be in my business and they don't even know me. It's like, no, I don't like that. So I kind of weaned off that. And then I got another guy who wrote to me who wanted to ask me if I'd like to get into the cruise industry. And I said, well, what do you mean? How do you do that? He says, well, it's great. I said, well, I'm not a big cabaret guy. I'm not one of these. He says, no, you don't need to be. You can go and rock it out if you want to. It's up to you. He says, but you just get on a ship for a few days to a week if you want. You just do 1 to 2 shows. That's it, and get to travel the world. I'm like, beauty. You know, I was single. I didn't have anyone, no responsibilities, no children. I thought, this is great, you know. So about eight to nine years of my life, I traveled the world probably 20 times, going around, you know, meeting. I made so many beautiful friends. I got to hone in on my own craft again, working with massive 7-piece bands, putting different shows together. And yeah, I mean, that's I'm diverting, aren't I? I'm talking too much.
That's all right. I was going to bring all this up anyway, so.
Oh, cool. So what's the point of having questions? I'll just keep talking.
Just tell me your whole story.
I know. But yeah, that's it. I'll mute. Hang on. Okay, ask me. Go.
No, I was going to mention with the cruise ships, you know, you won Princess Cruises Entertainer of the Year Award in 2016. Like, congratulations. And the first Australian to win it, too. making us proud.
Yeah, that was weird. That was a crazy time because I had no idea. And it was obviously it's an American award, but it's an international award at the same time. So I think there was over 2,000 people that they watch and see. And obviously judges on the people that are on boards, they judge you on your performance and they write in and they vote for you. And did that, and I got to fly over to Houston in the States, got on a ship and sailed around the Caribbean, and that's where I got to compete against an American and an English guy. So I did that and then won it, and that was it. But it was kind of weird. Like I didn't it all was just a whirlwind. But obviously got no cred, didn't have any cred back in Australia, obviously, because they're like, you're doing cruises? Because there's a whole perception about cruises that they think it's just the guy wearing a top hat and tails and doing all these cheesy cabaret songs. But honestly, cruising is the bomb. Like it is absolutely insane, especially over in the States and the UK. I mean, in Australia, Australian waters, it's a lot more older generation. But when you go to the States, it's a lot of families and younger people wanting to party and have a good time. And the shows were just going off. It was such a good time of my life. But obviously that's all slowed down now, isn't it? Poor Princess Cruises have got a thrashing. I'm like, you poor buggers.
Yeah, all the cruises, really.
I know. It's such a sad thing. I feel sorry for all the crew members, you know, have to go home. I mean, that's their livelihoods and, you know, it's a terrible, terrible situation.
Anybody in the entertainment industry, unfortunately, but got to look at the positives.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it is good that during that time you could, you know, hone your craft even more, because I know after High Five, just a lot of people thought you just disappeared. Like, you know, even I did for a little bit. I was like, what is he up to these days?
Well, they still did. Even like, because my publicity team now, because I've got a good team behind me now promoting me and pushing my solo stuff, they advised me to go onto TikTok. So they signed me up, did everything, and pretty much said, okay, this is, we need you to get on here and do a couple of things just to, you know, help out with your promoting and things like that. And they said, oh, is it okay if you put a High Five dance up on TikTok? I'm like, do I have to? It's like, it's been 12 years since I've done any bloody High Five songs. Anyway, so I put it up and it's almost had 1 million views. And all the comments I'm looking at, it's funny. I mean, the most common is that, okay, you have an age. And I love that one. That's good. I'm going to hold on to that one. But the second one is, I didn't know they were still alive. I'm like, what? Dude, seriously, I'm only like 10, 15 years older than the audience that were watching us. It wasn't like, you know, I mean, they were 5. I was 18 at the time. So I'm not that much older than the audience. And they're like, I thought you were alive. And I wrote, what? Alive? How old do you think I bloody am? I guess when you're 5, you think everyone's ancient. You think they're in their 60s or something. But I'm like, oh, my God.
Or more of like a where are they now episode, you know?
I know. But, you know, the thing is, I never stopped. I didn't disappear anywhere. I was still working, never stopped. But because, obviously, if you're not on TV or radio every day, people think that you've disappeared into oblivion. But, you know, you can't be on TV every day. You just can't. It's just not natural, you know. TV industry's changed, so.
But I definitely think going on, like, you know, I Will Survive and just recently The Voice, you know, I think that definitely helped get your, you know, name out there more and knowing, you know, being known as an actual solo artist instead of, you know, that guy from High Five.
Yeah. Well, the Voice actually contacted me for a few years to go on there, and I always rejected it because I've never been a fan of reality TV anyway, unless it's, you know, like a, you know, I didn't mind Biggest Loser. I didn't mind, you know, the Titan Games. People that are actually working hard to do things, you know what I mean, because they control their own existence within that show. But obviously I'm not going to put any shows down, but the ones out there where they just sit there and they do bloody nothing, just sit there and they're on camera and they become worldwide famous successes. I'm like, come on. There's people out there that have been working. I know they've been working for, you know, years and years and years to hone their craft to become an expert at their own craft, and they don't get a look in, but someone has 2 seconds of fame and then they'll become, you know, massive idols. I'm like, but what do? You do nothing. You just sit there. I can do that. I'm doing that right now. So, you know what I mean? So it is hard. So The Voice came up and I did that and I Will Survive. Once again, it was one of those things. I'm like, oh, I don't know, but I, as much as I was against doing the reality shows, last year's one was kind of cool because the people that didn't think I was dead or didn't think I was still around, there was kind of like a wake-up call, and they went, oh, he sings. He's still out there. He's doing stuff. That's great. I'm like, yeah. And so it was one of those things. So it was actually, that was the best thing I got out of it, you know, just to say, hey, I'm still alive here. Okay. I know. But, you know, the industry's changed. It's changed a lot. It's all about being online these days. It's all about social media. You know, it's not even about hard copies anymore, you know, hard copies of things, or it's all about the streams. It's funny, I got asked in an interview, I got asked for it because obviously I'm on Spotify, iTunes and Apple Music and all that, but my team said, are you on Spotify? I'm like, yeah. No. I say, well, we got to put your music up on Spotify because that's where it's at and stuff. I said, okay. And I got asked in an interview last week, so what's your favorite playlist? What's your playlist on Spotify? What is it? Tell us, what are you into? I'm like, oh, I mean, I've got some great CDs and got some old vinyls that'll got lying around and stuff like that. I said, I don't really have any playlists on Spotify. And they're like, oh, that's great. I know. And what they call me, that's nostalgic. Woohoo! I'm like, yeah, and they're just making me feel bloody old.
Did you know we filmed this interview? Well, come on over to our YouTube channel, Rave It Up TV. You can subscribe for free. And here's a little secret. We like to reward our active subscribers with autographed photos and merchandise, no matter where you are in the world. So don't forget to give us a thumbs up while you're there and get busy sharing the videos with your friends.
I did not know this. In 2011, you worked as a traffic reporter too for the Australian Traffic Network.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah, I did.
Just to make ends meet, or you just wanted to try something new, or?
Well, the main reason why I did that is because of radio. Because not only did I go up into the helicopter to do the TV reports, but I also did the radio. I worked over about, five or six radio stations doing the reports for that. Because there was a time in my life where I was like, I'm getting sick of traveling. I don't want to be doing this, and I was hoping to score a radio gig close to my home. But obviously, all the places were filled and everyone was happy with the presenters there. So the Traffic Network gig came up and they said, you'll be getting to do radio. And I said, well, okay, cool, I'll give it a go. But oh my God, like I had to get up at 3 or 4 in the morning and go and get on the helicopter at 5:30 in the morning. And then after that, come back and then do the radio stuff on the monitors. I'm like, yeah, maybe this is not so good anymore. So I only did that for, I think about a year I did that. If that.
Then you'd have to do it all again with around 5 o'clock, right? Or did you just do the morning stuff?
Yeah. Well, I live on the central coast of New South Wales. So at the time, all the reports were done out of Bankstown Airport. So I had to go out. My parents lived out in the west at that time. So I had to go and stay at their house the night before, then obviously drive home, then come back in again. So sometimes I did the morning and afternoon shifts. So I'm like, yeah, no, this is hell. I can't do it. I take my hat off to guys doing radio, and I take my hat off to guys doing the helicopter morning call early morning. So I'm like, nah, not for me.
I'm sure if you did it a while, your body would get used to it, but obviously you weren't. So, and I guess you really got to be passionate about it.
Yep. If any radio job comes up, lunch and afternoon shift for me.
Now, you do have your solo career, as we've been chatting about, and you've just released a brand new single called She Devil, and I absolutely love it. It is so damn catchy.
Oh, thank you.
You can't help but dance to it. It's like one of those songs. I wanted to chat about, like, you know, the inspiration for this song and everything, because you did just get married recently. Was this inspired by your good-looking wife at all, especially at the beginning of your relationship?
Oh, hell no. She's an angel. She's definitely not a she-devil, but it's weird because obviously I went over last year. I got a new manager and she's done everything. She's put everything together for me and she's found a team that want to work with me and get everything going. So that kind of gave me a bit of a kick up the butt to say, okay, they want original songs. And at that stage, I hadn't written any original songs since early 2000s. No word of a lie, I got off the phone call and they said, yep, cool, we want to record you, do this, but publicity, we're going to work with you. And I got back, I wrote about 3 albums worth of music over the space of a few months. She Devil was one of the first 3. And obviously I haven't had the perfect life in relationships. You know, I've had my ups and downs and I'm not going to name any names, and obviously and this song is definitely not about Kelly, who was in the show with me, because we were together for 7 years. This is not about her. So people have been asking me, oh, it's about Kelly. Oh, it's about Kelly. It's about Kelly. Says, nah, definitely not about her. So it's nothing to do with her. But it was about a relationship that I did have in my past life, and it was a difficult one. And the song is obviously not just about that. It's a tongue-in-cheek sort of fictionalized thing. But I saw the I came up with the name, and I'm like, yeah, because that's how I come up with the title of a song, and then I work right around that. But yeah, it's a tongue-in-cheek thing, and it's for everybody who's ever dealt with a he or a she devil in their life to give them a bit of a laugh. But what I thought was lacking on radio is that I look back on the old 80s and the 90s stuff where it was rocky, but you could dance to it. And it had something catchy, but also had live drums, electric guitar, and obviously some synth sounds as well. And I love that sound. And I haven't heard anyone do that since, obviously, In Excess or Terence Trent D'Arby and all those guys, you know what I mean, back in the day, which is really, really cool music. So I thought, you know what, I'll write around a song based around that kind of vibe. And everyone's, as you do, like everyone's been digging it, and I'm really happy. I mean, obviously not everyone's going to like it, but I'm really happy with the way it's turned out, and it's got a damn sax solo. Now, that is sexy.
You don't hear many songs like that, you know, anymore. Yeah. Your hard work has paid off, so good on you.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, it's not, you know, nothing's ever guaranteed, as I mentioned earlier. So, I mean, the song's out there. I did the video clip for it all in isolation in the back of my room in my house.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. How's that experience? I feel like you must have a whole new appreciation for how music videos are made now, right? With lighting and... Well, camera work.
I got to tell you, I lost 4 kilos doing it. It was funny. You look at it and behind the scenes. So I do photography as well. I don't know if you know about that. I got my diploma in photography. But it's nothing for work. It's just for love. That's my hobby and another one of my passions. Yeah. So I got my old DSLR camera and I put it on a stand, and they helped me set it up and told me what angle they wanted it at, and I had to strip all the furniture out of my back room, and they pretty much took me out of the video and put everything around me. There's actually a little behind the scenes thing on my YouTube channel. Just go to my YouTube channel. It's insane. I'm like, oh my God, all these different layers and stuff that they've done. And I had to borrow my parents' treadmill. They brought it up, you know, during COVID. Yeah, brought it up during the COVID time, dropped it off, and I was running on my parents' treadmill and stuff. So that's probably why I lost 4 bloody kilos. But no, it's a really cool clip. It's very 90s. It's very In Excess, and exactly the way that I wanted the song to go to, you know, that sort of vibe.
Yeah, and as the press release says, it's like In Excess meets Stevie Wonder meets Diesel. True. Yeah, you've done really well. You should be so proud.
Oh, early days, you never know. It might be a flop. You never know, but hopefully, you know.
At the moment,
majority of people will like it. Oh, good.
You know, Rave It Up now has a private Facebook group where we give away regular prizes and you get to have a sneak peek at what we're up to. You'll get to see some fun behind the scenes action and can be part of the interview process yourself, just like a real journalist. So come join us and share your passion for entertainment with all of our other fans. Just search Rave It Up Community on Facebook and we look forward to getting to know.
And this is your first single from your upcoming album, Hurricane, which is set to hopefully get released later this year. Fingers crossed, right? And I love the name Hurricane. Like, it's really cool. How did you come up with that?
Well, that's one of the songs on the album, which will be another single coming up eventually. In all honesty, I wrote the song, the original writing, which is weird now because the song has so much relevance to what's going on in the world right now, you know, with all the racism and stuff like that and people that are suffering with mental health and stuff, because very personal to me. What my an ex that I, you know, very close to back in the day, she took her own life about a year ago, and I actually wrote the song in reference to people that are struggling with mental illness and people that are struggling through life, through, you know, and people that are taking their lives through suicide. It's just, it's an awful thing that's all over the world. So I wrote that song, and the meaning behind is, you know, about me being that hurricane for people that haven't got the hurricane within themselves, you know, people that can't fight for themselves, people that can't stand up, people that can't look at themselves in the mirror, or people that just can't live each day. And that's what that song is all about. So that's the reason why I call the Hurricane. I mean, two reasons. One, obviously, it's the title track of the album, but the other thing is the album is so energy packed from beginning to end. I mean, I haven't finished recording it yet because of the bloody pandemic that's going on. Because I recorded it over in New Zealand. So I've done three tracks of the album, and I'm hoping to get back over there. Once the board is open for NZ, I'm straight over there to finish it. But the album is going to be kick ass. Seriously, I'm so happy with all the songs that I've written and chosen for this album. And it is a massive variety, but, you know, still around that main kind of pop, rock, dance. There's some soulful ballads on there. There's dance tracks. There's just a plethora of different kinds of styles, which is going to appeal, once again, you know, from the teens right up until the senior citizens, I hope. So.
That's awesome. So some more catchy songs like She-Devil.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. There's some really cool tracks on there. So you just never know. You just never, never know. You can't appeal to everybody, but you never know. You never know.
Well, definitely keep in touch with me, and we'll get back on the show when the album gets released. I want to chat more about it when it's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope you love it. I had someone write to me yesterday saying they love She-Devil. That's their everyday gym song. They take it to the gym and run to it every day. I'm like, yeah, I was on a treadmill too. Yep. During that song, yeah. Yeah, it works. It works.
Just pretend you're running away from her. I love
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
And what else can we expect from Nathan Foley after the album too? Is there any more stuff that's coming up?
Oh, I'm hoping a tour, actually, because, I mean, I haven't toured Australia or New Zealand, for that matter, for many, many years. I've been mostly overseas. So, you know, if the album is even a reasonable success, I'd love to get it back on the road again and do a regional tour and do a main city tour around Australia. I miss the Australian towns. I've Australian people, and I'm hoping you can get a rocking band together, a good 6 to 7 piece rock band, backing vocals, just get out there and just whip out these songs and showcase them to people. And obviously it have to be after the album, because I'm hoping that I get out there and they'll know the songs, you know. That'd be cool.
Awesome. Well, keep us updated. You know, we got to wait for all the restrictions to get lifted, but
I know,
maybe
I
later
know.
In the year. Probably won't be able to tour internationally for a while, but around Australia, I don't see why not.
Yeah.
I don't care, as long as it's just the New Zealand Australian, you know, bubble. I'm happy with that so far. That'll be good for me.
It's good even through COVID that you can still, you know, with social media and stuff, still release your music.
Yeah, well, it's been a blessing and a curse. I mean, the curse is obviously not being able to get out on live stage and perform to an audience, but the blessing to me is it's actually made me stop. I've lost the dark rings under my eyes from traveling as much. I've been home. I've been able to spend time with the family and my little baby, which is, you know, he's only coming up to 6 months old on Friday. 6 months old on Friday, so he's just an absolute gem of a little bloke. So I get to see him grow every day and you know, just to be able to write and get myself sorted. You know, obviously when I was traveling a lot, my vocals were getting tired a lot as well from all the travel, you know, the different air conditioning systems, aeroplanes. So I've been home in the fresh air and my voice is, you know, stronger than ever, which is I'm so happy with. So, yeah, that's been my blessing.
You're coming back with a bang. Love it. And before we, you know, finish up the interview today, do you have any advice for our listeners today who might want to follow their dreams of becoming a singer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've always said for people that want to get into the industry, don't do it for fame, because fame is a quick thing. Anybody could be famous. Someone could be a bloody axe murderer from down the street and end up on the front page news. You got to do it for one. You got to have a passion. You got to have a love for it. You got to have patience. And obviously you have a talent as well. So, and never give up. You see a lot of overnight successes and they fold in the space of a month or so. Look at the longevity, be in it for the long haul and just never give up. And also one more thing, which is the most important thing to be in this industry, is to have a good attitude. Be nice to every single person you work with, even if they're absolute a-holes. Be nice to everyone you talk to. Be nice to the people that are giving you work. Be nice to the people that are at your concerts. Be respectful, and if no one respects you back, keep being respectful.
Don't want to burn any bridges.
No, exactly. You know, just be a good person.
Well, that's great advice. Thank you very much for that. I hope everyone takes that on board. And we are unfortunately getting to the end of the interview. It's gone so quickly. But as a closing statement, and was probably the most important question, knowing what you know now, what would you tell your 14-year-old self?
Yeah, I got this same thing, but said in a different way by a family member. They said, if you could have your life over again, would you do anything different? And I said no, because you have to go through the struggles to end up where you want to be. you know, nothing is ever going to be perfect. So if I had to tell my 14-year-old self, I'd say, hey, good luck. Just do what you do, you know, just do what you do, because you can't change things. Whatever will happen will happen.
Just be like, it's going to be one hell of a ride. Yeah. Because otherwise you need to be able to learn from your lessons and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
If you go through a breezy life and everything's handed to you on a silver platter and everything's, you know, I mean, I've had my share of ups and downs. I mean, people see me and they see, oh, you've had a successful career in certain things, but that didn't come without struggle. You know, there's always struggle in everything we do, but, you know, the struggle makes it all the more worthwhile when you get to those goals and achieve them.
Yeah, and you appreciate it more. I really, really agree with that. And before we go, if the listeners would like to contact you or find out what you're up to in the future, check out She Devil and everything, where should they go?
Well, they can go to nathanfoley.com, or they can go to my Instagram, Nathan Foley Official. And actually on my Instagram, you get the link on my bio of my Instagram, which has got my YouTube, a link to my YouTube, my Facebook, everything on there. So, and I'm on TikTok. It's been 2 weeks and it's gone bloody viral. It's crazy. But Instagram, go Instagram, you'll get more out of that one.
Easy enough to find you. Probably just type you into Google. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, Nathan. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I know you're a busy man, so I appreciate your time.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you.
You're welcome on the show anytime. So keep in contact. If you want to talk about the album or anything in the future, let me know.
No worries. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you want to be the first to get every new episode, remember to subscribe to this podcast for free. Just search for Rave It Up on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and share it with your friends, and tell us what you loved the most, and even let us know what you want to hear on this podcast. You can even check out the videos of our interviews on our YouTube channel, Rave It Up TV. And for more, visit our website, raveitup.tv.com. Now, before I leave you today, I just want you to remember that you are loved and you are beautiful. Bye!